So I've been asked several times, why are you doing this? What brought this up? Why are you doing podcasts? Charlene and I have been talking about it. Why am I doing a podcast? What's the point of doing this? Why am I doing it? Well, the reality is God has given me such a rich life, such an opportunity to have been a part of so many unique and different things, to go to so many unusual and pretty extreme places at times, and to come back with experiences and understandings that I never would have gotten. If I can convey those things to someone else and benefit them, it's all worthwhile then. And I'll be honest with you, one of the things that I also really want to make sure that I do is take those things that God has instilled in me or given me and find a way to best articulate them to somebody else so they can do the same thing. I'll be honest with you, more than once, doing Right Side Radio, I have found that people have said how much it benefited them to be able to hear what they knew they believed, but they had not put into words yet, and it gave them something they could go have those water cooler conversations and, you know, talking to their friends at Sunday school or wherever. Look, the bottom line is, if I can do all that I can to educate, enlighten, empower, and entertain folks around me with the things that God has instilled in me, then yeah, I'm going to do it. So one of the things that I've really been working to do is spend some time digging into the conservative principles that I believe in. True conservative principles, not just like ideas or beliefs or understandings, principles, because principles are different. Principles are like bedrock. Principles are like the thing that you stand upon when all else is going crazy. When the world around you is telling you to do this and do that, you know what you can stand on because they're principled. Well, what is a conservative set of principles? Because, yeah, I'm a Republican. Does that mean enough? No. The reality is there's a vast difference between being a conservative and just being a Republican. I've seen that time and again. But unpacking what it means to be a conservative, outlining the difference between liberals and conservatives, even between some Republicans and conservatives, it was a good exercise for me personally. But it also got a great deal of feedback. And so, yeah, as I worked through the process, I realized that the best place to start, like bar none, aside from my faith, because I do believe that Jesus Christ is Lord. He's the way, the truth, and the life. But aside from my faith, one of the greatest ways to explain the bedrocks, the principles upon which I believe I stand as a conservative, is to turn straight to the Constitution, particularly those rights that are enshrined in what we call the First 10 Amendments or the Bill of Rights. You see, they are actual rights, and that's a legal term. You hear these phrases, it's my right, or don't step on my rights, or you have no right. Well, that's nothing but a cliche and hyperbole. I'm talking about true rights. The legal term that defines your authority to operate in a certain way without fear of recrimination or reprisal, particularly from your own government. To have actual rights, y'all, is something that is unknown in some parts of the world, even today. I've been to places where the rule of law meant nothing. I've seen what other people have lived through in under oppression and tyranny. And I've been there on the ground floor of watching democracy stand up when people began to figure out what it meant to have rights. Look, whether it be the First Amendment right to the freedom of speech and religion, or the Second Amendment right to bear arms, or the Fourth Amendment right to being free from unreasonable search and seizure, or the Tenth Amendment limiting the powers of the federal government in favor of the various states. I mean, it was and still is a list that was not only well thought out and carefully worded, but it was born out of necessity from the very experiences of the founding fathers and the citizens of that time living in the new United States of America. So, if we're going to do this, then what better place to start than with the first one, the very First Amendment? Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press or the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. That's a lot. I mean, there's a reason why this one was first. Truthfully, we could talk all day about each phrase by themselves, the free exercise of religion, the freedom of speech or of the press, the right to peaceably assemble, the right to petition the government for redress of grievances. Y'all, they took a big stick to that one on the First Amendment. So much of what they gave rise to the onset of this Revolutionary War is embedded in that very First Amendment. The Declaration of Independence, the entire Revolution, the establishment of the Republic, all of it is like in that First Amendment. Now, if you've heard my radio show at all, you may recall my good friend Hamid. Hamid was my interpreter in Afghanistan. He's been on the show multiple times to discuss the issues surrounding the debacle of a pullout that the Biden administration led back in August of 21. But Hamid's personal story is amazing in many ways. He is now a U.S. citizen with a master's degree from Yale. But when I first met him, he was just a 17-year-old kid who went everywhere with my team, even lived with us. And the stories he told about life under the Taliban were amazing. I remember once Hamid told me that he was in the bazaar in Kunduz, Afghanistan, near the time of the day when the muezzin would call Muslims out to prayer. And the Taliban had what he referred to as religious police, who came through the bazaar with whips, smacking people over the head and shoulders as if they were, you know, not rushing to their prayers quick enough. The Taliban also took over his school, converted it into a military barracks. They seized the personal property of citizens to use for themselves. Gatherings were not allowed because, you know, when people get together, that can lead to unrest or rebellion. Can't have that. Information from the outside world, hard to come by, because there was no press, no radio, no news, as it were. It was a horrible existence. And there was one day as I was standing there with another one of our interpreters, a young man named Weiss, and I remarked that I could see kites flying off in the distance. And Weiss, who had lost several brothers when the Soviets had bombed his village, he looked at me and he said, "Sir, that's a tradition with Afghan children, but the Taliban, they outlawed it. To see the kites flying now means the Taliban are gone." You know, it's hard for us to imagine as Americans what it must be like to live under a system where you are prohibited by law from practicing your faith in your own way or of your own choosing, of speaking your mind, of assembling with other like-minded individuals, or for that matter, being able to take your own government to court if you feel that you've been wronged. But there are places right now in this world where those concepts that we call our First Amendment rights, they're totally alien. They are something that is actually as uncommon as, you know, the grouping that we talk about and all those things that are embedded in the First Amendment. They are sometimes allowed in part, but not often guaranteed. We live with the actual right to speak, the right to worship, to assemble, to hear news, to even sue our government. Now, to be sure, there are limitations. Let's be clear. If your religion calls for human sacrifice, ain't going to happen. If your free speech is designed to incite violence or mayhem, not allowed. If the press chooses to willfully slander or defame, well, there are means by which they can be held accountable in court. And the mere fact that you can seek redress from your government does not mean that you're going to prevail on the merits. You still have to prove your case. Look, the government can step in and tell you, you can't paint your Antifa slogans on the statues downtown. You won't be able to claim your freedom of speech when you destroy property, right? If you give a speech calling for the death or destruction of your political opponents, well, that would not be allowed to stand. If a city council tries to pass a law saying Christians can't run for office, not going to work. Likewise, government should think twice before it shuts down a church, like during a pandemic, or denying the rights of others to assemble, like when a trucker's freedom convoy happens. Even those crazy examples I just cited, though, the fact is, they are something you're still allowed to argue for. Even the things that I told you that you're not supposed to do, you can argue your point because you're allowed to even argue it. That's how serious this is. You see, these are rights. They are not to be confused with privileges or permissions or so-called entitlements. And the very first one out the gate, the one that sets the stage for all else, the First Amendment, says that we have a right to worship, a right to speak, a right to be given information via the press, with a right to get together with others and to hold our government accountable. It's as if the Declaration of Independence got summarized in one single amendment to our great Constitution. Are the other amendments important? Absolutely. But the First Amendment is in first place for a reason. That's my philosophy.